Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Chasing Justice here on the America Out Loud Radio Network. I'm Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and I'm thrilled to be here with you again. Well, I'm thrilled to be here on Chasing Justice, but I have to tell you, I'm a little concerned with some of the goings-on I see taking place in our country almost every single day now. Now, this has been a topic we have talked about for the past couple of weeks, but some new stuff has joined into the mix, and I really wanted to get down to it. So one of the things that came out recently was we did get some documents on the FISA warrants that were used to spy on the Trump campaign, specifically on Carter Page, who was part of the Trump campaign even for a very short period of time. But the purpose of that entire warrant was so that the Obama administration, the Clinton campaign, the Department of Justice at the time, as well as the FBI, could get a glimpse into the Trump campaign and see what they could find out what was going on. Totally an inappropriate action on their part. Because basically what you have here is domestic spying on a political candidate, on a political enemy. So we're using the absolute power of the federal government and all the tools, all our investigative abilities, as well as the different technologies that we have on our side that's normally used for spying on our enemies, our foreign enemies, and they were used against a private American citizen. Don't we get how important and how serious this is? This is something that I barely hear any talk about from any news agency on, you know, the seriousness. And I got to tell you, I'm really concerned that our Congress is not looking at this and holding hearings specifically into this particular topic. Everybody seems to be dancing away and saying, well, we don't want to interfere with the Mueller investigation. We don't want to make it look like we're, you know, pulling for Trump. Never mind pulling for Trump. Trump will handle his own problems. This is a problem of the American people. This was a president and his administration and all the powers that be using all of these different spying techniques and abilities against an American citizen. This is not something that's supposed to happen in the United States. Absolutely not. And we're totally missing the mark here by not examining this. So recently I saw Alan Dershowitz. And I got to tell you, over the years, Alan Dershowitz has not been a friend to people on the right. He is a left-wing attorney, but I got to give the guy credit. He's always made his case and his point very well. I could be annoyed with the point he was taking. I could think he was wrong in taking that point of view, whatever it was, but I had a hard time arguing with his logic and how he set up the case. Well, recently, he's been out and about, and he wrote a book to the effect of, you know, the case against impeaching Trump. And what he's basically saying is that with everything we have seen here, everything that's going on is exactly what I'm describing. It's becoming clearer and clearer day by day that what happened here is the American people were betrayed by their government. They're calling Trump a traitor because he went over and he spoke to Putin in Helsinki, and he had some nice things to say about the guy when he came out. Now, he might be wrong-headed about that, but that's not being traitors. What Obama and his people did is traitorous. And unfortunately, our friends on the left really don't seem to see this. They and if they do see it and they ignore it, I think that's even worse. You know, I could look back and say, and I've said this all along, if it turned out that Trump did something inappropriate, if he conspired, not colluded, collusion is not a crime, but if he conspired with a foreign government to change the outcome of our elections, I'd be the first one screaming and standing up saying we have to take action against him. But that's not what happened. What happened is we had the Obama administration and our Justice Department, our FBI, and all of these people together working to undermine an American election. They were trying to stop this American candidate from winning. And then when he did win, they're trying to use it, and they're still using it to this very day, to damage him so that they can come up with some nonsense to try and get some left-wing Congress to impeach him over some other nonsense. If you think it isn't gotten bad yet, wait till you see that if this blue wave does materialize, which it's hard to say whether the blue wave's actually going to materialize and they're going to take the House of Representatives. They may take some seats, but the Republicans may hold it. If they hold it, then all of our investigations continue, all of this. And when I say our investigations, I don't mean like I have a stake, us against them. When I'm saying our, I mean our, as you and me, American citizens. These are our investigations, because if the Republicans lose the House, we will never, ever find out what happened here. And that means it can happen again. Matter of fact, the minute that the Republicans lose control of the House, it starts to happen again. And all of us, you and me, are being played by the people we have leading us. Now, I'm shocked. You know, every single day we see newscasts and we see these Democrats coming out, lining up one after another. Chuck Schumer, this is traitorous, this is ridiculous. You know, you got this Adam Schiff coming out making these absurd comments. You see these left-wing celebrities and all these people coming out and saying these horrible things about the president. Where's any pushback? Where is anybody coming back and saying what I'm saying right now? What happened here in the 2016 election, there was collusion, there was conspiracy, there were crimes, and the American people were hurt. It seems pretty clear right now where that came from. That came from our friends on the left. That came from the Democratic Party, from the top right down. So let me get back to Dershowitz. You know, like I said, I can't really argue with his points of view over the years of how he makes them. I may not care for his point of view, but he makes good points. And in his new book, he makes the point of the case against Trump for trying to impeach him is not correct. And he brings up an important thing with the dossier. It seems in the information that's been released that they did rely heavily on the Steele dossier, this piece of garbage document that was basically paid for by Hillary Clinton and her campaign. And it was made up information used to damage Donald Trump. If that right there doesn't scare you, it's one thing for a politician to go out and make claims that, you know, I'm the greatest and my plan is going to be the best and my opponent, his plan or her plan is not going to work. That's one thing. Then you start to add in there, their plan's not going to work because they have some evil intent against you. Well, that requires us to probably look and see, is there any evil intent that's been brought up? Let's examine it. And it turned out that there is or there isn't. Well, Mr. Dershowitz, what he's saying is that by looking at the letter that came out, we got a redacted version of the FISA warrant that was used, the application that was used to get the warrant to spy on the Trump campaign, specifically Carter Page. And it seems very clear in there that they relied on this dossier that they knew was fake. They faked up the whole thing. Now, in another show here on Chasing Justice, another episode, we talked about how you get a warrant. Well, you go in there, you have to swear to a judge that everything in your warrant is truthful to the best of your ability. Well, if you have a document that you know is made up for specific use by Hillary Clinton, paid for by her campaign, of lies specifically to damage her opponent, Donald Trump in this case, and you go to a judge and you make a case to the judge that this is a legitimate document, that's an absolute violation of everything that's involved with getting search warrants. This goes to the essence of who we are as American citizens. The Fourth Amendment, search and seizure. They lied to a court, or at least they embellished to a court. They held back information from a court so that the court would get an impression that this dossier was real and there was something to it. And we better listen to it, because this Carter Page, he might actually be a spy. He might actually be working with a foreign government to hurt us. And that's why they issued the warrants. So there's a couple points here that Dershowitz brings up. He believes that it may be a violation of the Franks law. Now, Franks, I had explained once before. If you get a search warrant, you go to a judge, you make an affidavit, you apply for a search warrant, and you get it. And somewhere down the road, the people that you searched, the defendant in the case, reads the document and says, wait a minute, none of this is true. This is all made up. You have a Franks hearing. You know, State versus Franks is where the case comes from. So I think it might have been Franks, Maryland versus Franks. I'm not positive which it was, but it's called a Franks hearing in law enforcement. And basically, that means somebody is challenging the information in your search warrant affidavit and application. And if you lied in there and it comes out that you lied, this is a major violation. This is a huge problem. People can find their careers ruined, and they could also suffer criminal implications for their actions. So Dershowitz is making the point that he thinks there may be a violation of the Franks rule here, that knowing that this document, this dossier, was fake and paid for by Hillary Clinton, but used enthusiastically to lie to the court so that a warrant could be issued so that they could listen in on the Trump campaign, spy on them. This, my friends, is at the heart of what happened here. This is the conspiracy. You see, a conspiracy is when one or more people make a plan to do something criminal, and then they take overt actions to make that plan take place. Well, if we sit around and say, hey, how can we spy on the Trump campaign? What could we possibly do? That's not a conspiracy. We all agree we would like to do that. That would be great. It'd be great to spy on his campaign. But how could we do it? And somebody says, hey, why don't we get a warrant? Wow, it would be great if we can get a court to issue us a warrant and we could listen in and see what's going on. We're still not a conspiracy. You got an idea, and it's a negative idea. It's not a good idea, but it's an idea. Now, we go and get this dossier, and we write up an affidavit, and we take that affidavit and we present it to a court knowing that either we're holding back information that the court needs to make a proper judgment, or we're supporting that what things we know are absolute lies or unverified, and we're swearing that they're verified and they're truth. Now we have crossed the line into a conspiracy. We have made a conspiracy, which is a crime. We have conspired to do something illegal, which is to defraud the judge, the court, and to get a warrant against an American citizen to spy in on their campaign. So Dershowitz's point is powerful, that this could be a violation of the Franks Act. So we got to take a look at that. The other thing that we know in this letter that came out that shows us, and again, it was heavily redacted, was that they relied on a Yahoo story from Yahoo News, which Yahoo News tends to be a little bit to the left. So they relied on a story from there about the dossier to show the court a second piece of information. Apparently, this is what they used to say, see, and here's some independent news reporting about this dossier, when really it was all done by the same people. Again, that's an overt act that they took there. That's a conspiracy. So it's really amazing to me that there are not hearings, that Republicans are not lining up to say, we have to do something about this. We cannot let this happen again. And my fellow citizens out there, these are going to be the moments that we're going to look back on. And we're going to say, it was right here in front of us. The entire problem became very, very clear, and we did nothing about it. And we do that at our own peril. You know, the crossroads I talk about all the time, and last week I was saying, I think we're beyond the crossroad now. Well, if we do not do anything about this, if we do not demand that there is a full and complete investigation on what happened here and hold those people accountable, we are, for all intents and purposes, giving away the legitimacy of our government and our democracy. Because here we have right in front of us, we saw people do things purposely. People in power were traitors to all of us, to you and me, to the Constitution, to our country, to everyone who's ever fought for it. They used all that power purposefully to go after another American citizen. And I don't care if you like Trump or not. When he was running for president, he was just like you and me. He wasn't a government person. He wasn't an elected official. He was a citizen of the United States running for that office. A right that all of us have. Now, we might not have the means to do it, but we all have a right to do it. This is part of what makes our country free, what's our part of our freedom, our liberty. And it is justice that any one of us could run for office if we wanted to. Can you imagine now we have the entire weight of the government tipping the scale in favor of one candidate over another using the power of that government? Is that American? Like I said, say what you want about what Trump said about Putin, that he thinks we should get along with him, that he doesn't want to say that the guy tried to meddle in the elections, and that's a whole nother, it's a whole nother can of worms here. We can explain that a little bit. I think I understand what he did there, and I'm not saying I agree with him not being forceful about Russia meddling. But the bottom line is that this is the moment we are going to look back on and we're going to say, that's when it happened. That's the moment we lost our freedom and our liberty. Because if we let this go, it's going to happen again. And the next time, it could be in a much more serious situation. Now, I say that and you say, well, what could be more serious than a presidential election? Well, in this one, we had an old-fashioned socialist like Hillary Clinton, who would have probably done soft socialism. I'm going to guess. She would have continued Obamacare. She would have nationalized some other things that we take for granted every single day. But she would not have been a radical like we see some of these new Democrats that are coming out. She wouldn't have been a radical socialist pushing us closer and closer towards something we don't recognize at all, like the young woman out of Queens, New York, who is a clear advocate of a much more radical type of socialism. So the next election, the next time this comes up, when the Democrats are in charge of things, and they turn around and they use that power against us, because you know what? Now they figured out how to do it without getting caught, how to do it without getting in trouble, and nobody was held to account. They do it again, and now we have some kind of a government ushered in that will totally and completely undo all of our democracy, all of our freedom, all of our justice, and we will do it willingly because we're not doing anything about this. So this is my clarion call. This is the moment we're going to look back on. This is the moment I see very clearly. We don't have all the facts, but we have a lot of them. And I think in the words of our friends on the left, let me say this, where there's smoke, there's fire. We saw the Strzok testimony, and we saw the Page testimony, and they conflict. It's pretty clear they were all working together to undermine our country. This is not justice. This is a problem. We are all in deep trouble if this is not uncovered and cleaned out now. So here, on Chasing Justice, we're going to keep hammering this home. This is something we all need to think about each and every day. I'm going to tell you, write to your congressman, whether they're Republican, Democrat, or independent. Write to them, phone call them, and tell them, make sure we get to the bottom of this. I'd also say write to the president and tell him, take some action. Do something to move this along, because if not, we won't have a country we'll recognize. We'll be right back with round two here on Chasing Justice on the America Out Loud Radio Network.
Well, the Out Loud perspective awaits you in life, love, politics, a healthy lifestyle, your faith, personal development, and living an out loud life on AmericaOutLoud.com. Blitzer News and Entertainment Network, where you can listen 24/7 on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Okay, ding, 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 round two. Welcome back to Chasing Justice here on the America Out Loud Radio Network. Before we get started, I just want to remember to talk about our sponsors here who are very important to keeping the show going. First, I want to thank the America Out Loud Radio Network because they give us a voice without any control. They let us talk about whatever we think is important. And this is a problem we have in America today, ladies and gentlemen, pretty clear. Here on the America Out Loud Network, you can look at all of the different shows that are on here. There is something for everybody, and there is no guidance between this. They like something that you have to say, and they tell you, go ahead and talk about it. So I want to thank the network, and I'm glad everybody's listening in. I'd like to thank Blue Magazine, www.thebluemagazine.com, a great magazine for law enforcement. If you're interested in law enforcement or you're on the job, corrections, whatever, give it a look. It's a great magazine. And I also want to thank A-Plus Technology and Security Solutions out of Bayshore, Long Island. Fantastic company. We like to have them here with us. And we have our forepaws here again. Here in our studio with us. And you never know, these dogs are running around everywhere, and we try and do the right thing with our rescues, because they're really beautiful animals that need to be cared for and I like them in the studio with me. They make me feel comfortable. So every once in a while, I hear them nip or yip or jump around. So A-Plus Technology out of Long Island, they have everything for your safety and security needs. Whether you're a school, a business, doesn't make a difference. They have it all. So aplustechnology.com, take a look. And finally, my company. I'd like to remember to take a look. School security is a big deal. And so is business security. And right now we have school starting up in the next couple of weeks for a lot of places in the South. School starts in August. So give us a call, jpangaro.com, and see what we can do for you. All right, so here in the neighborhood in round two, we have something a little different today. A couple of weeks ago, we had a young attorney on, Mr. Joe Pangaro. Not me. There's another Joe Pangaro, just as handsome, I guarantee you. He is an attorney, and Joe came on to talk about some disorder in the court stuff. So we're going to get to that in a little bit. But first of all, I'd like to introduce Joe. How are you?
Hey, Dad. Great to be back. I'm a fan of the show now. I can't believe I'm on The Neighborhood. That's, you know, this really is, if for any listeners here, this really is your actual neighborhood. I've been growing up, all these people, I just refer to them as uncles, you know, Uncle Bill and Uncle Jack, and then the contrarian, Jimmy. I don't think anyone can quite explain what a character this guy is. He's one of the true characters in all of New Jersey. And it's funny hearing these guys on the radio. This is what it's like just hanging out with you. So very cool to be on The Neighborhood.
Well, I'm glad you're here. And I know you live in a different part of Jersey, so you have your own neighborhood there, but you come back to this neighborhood. That's great. And also with us today, we have Mr. Jack Patterson. Jack is our all-American rock and roll rock star car racer man. So he was just telling us, you're getting a new car or something, Jack? What's going on?
I was supposed to last night, but unfortunately the Jersey weather did its usual and ruined the weekend.
Yes, well, you know, there's rain and terrible weather all across the country the last week or so.
No, it's just here.
Certainly feels that way.
It certainly feels like that. Well, I want to welcome you guys back. And, you know, for anybody who heard us a couple of weeks ago, one of the topics we had, it's summertime, we're trying to talk about some lighter things. We're going to get into our new Supreme Court justice pick that the president chose, and we'll talk about that. And Joe's going to bring a little expertise on that, his understanding of the entire constitutionality of who he's picking and his philosophy. So before that, Joe, we had Jim here talking about aliens a few weeks ago.
Oh, God.
And I got a lot of phone calls about the aliens. People thought it was funny. They thought it was great. And then a lot of people want to tell me what they thought was going on. They thought maybe I was an alien on the radio.
You should route these calls directly to Jimmy. I think that should be part of it.
Well, at the time, and I think I told everyone, we made Jimmy wear a tinfoil hat. And here is the tinfoil hat is here.
Just theater of the mind. That is an actual tinfoil hat that they have right here.
Yes. As prescribed by Jimmy.
Yes, it fit his specifications.
Although I don't think of anyone to wear the tinfoil hat to keep the aliens from their thoughts. I think we should keep the hat off of Jimmy, because the aliens, if they hear that knucklehead, they're just going to fly away.
It's a homing signal.
Now, first of all, I'm going to take offense at that. Jim is not a knucklehead. He's his points of view on the aliens are sometimes a little not traditional, but he did have the hat, and we keep the hat here. It's a souvenir of the show now, and we like to keep it with us when he couldn't be here. So today he's out, I think he's feeding the homeless today. That was what he does once in a while, so we want to congratulate him for taking care of people in the world. Now, Joe, our president, President Trump, he made a choice for the Supreme Court, and you were talking about Kavanaugh, is that his name?
Kavanaugh's the guy.
Mr. Kavanaugh. So he has some particular philosophy, and you were kind of giving us an idea of what that is. So why don't you let our listeners know, what is the whole deal with Judge Kavanaugh?
Well, what's interesting is this is sort of, originalism is the name of the philosophy, and it was actually developed by Justice Scalia before he even got to the bench. And you'll hear a lot of people say, oh, the Federalist Society picked this guy, oh, this and that. The Federalist Society does a lot of work with young attorneys, with law schools, and then they do speeches and more or less courses and things on a way to interpret the law. And so originalism is really something that's been pushed by the Federalist Society. I'm a Fed Sci Society member. I actually think it makes the most sense. And in a nutshell, what it is you interpret the text of the statute using a reasonable means of like what it reasonably means at the time that the law was passed.
Do they use, in his philosophy, do they use the Constitution as a yardstick?
The Constitution is, there's a great question. The Constitution is what drives all of it. And the idea being that A lot of people, I don't think, really appreciate the Constitution controls the government. So the laws the government passes control the people, but the Constitution controls the government.
Which is the check on government power.
Right.
Okay.
And a friend of mine, when I was explaining this to him, he wasn't very happy with the idea of Judge Kavanaugh or originalists, and he asked me, he goes, well, do they have dictionaries from the 1770s, or do they just make that part up? You'd be surprised, they actually do use dictionaries from the era. Originalists do. They have dictionaries from the era to the best they can. And then if they don't have that, they'll use reasonable interpretations based on words in the Constitution. So an example is, the Constitution says you can't be deprived of life, liberty, or property without the due process of law. Obviously, that means that with due process, you could be deprived of life. So you can't say that it's cruel and unusual punishment to have the death penalty, and now
because it's part of the Constitution, as long as you follow due process,
right?
That's
a, so.
Okay.
The idea is you don't want the death penalty anymore. That's fine. You can pass a new law, but don't ask the Supreme Court to say it's unconstitutional now, because it's right there in the Constitution that it's something that can be done.
So I guess, and for people who are trying to keep up with this, and I think this is great, I'm glad you're on, is that when people say, "Well, it's not constitutional," but you're saying if it's in the Constitution, it is constitutional. And then the justices have to look at that and say, well, yeah, there it is right there.
Right, and it wouldn't be doing justice not to mention the kind of competing philosophy is, you know, the living Constitution, of the mm-hmm. idea of, well, hey, the world has changed since 1776, you know, so we have to look at the words as what they meant then, and now we have to interpret them and apply them to this new world. And those are kind of the big battle lines. And the originalists, more or less, the response is, the world has changed. That's absolutely right. Go ahead and pass a law that reflects those changes, but don't ask us nine old lawyers in Washington to declare what those new rules are. Mm-hmm. And, you know, another example that Scalia gave was free speech. You know, it only says speech in the Constitution. Now, if you're just reading the text, that would mean, well, the government can regulate any letters you write, or can regulate what you wear in your shirt.
Because that's not, per se, speech out of your mouth, talking.
Right. And so what Scalia is, you know, the point of originalism is it's a reasonable interpretation. You don't have to be a nut about it. Obviously, speech also means what you were writing at, like, if you were writing notes, not mm-hmm. just speaking.
Sure.
But
it's expression, personal expression.
It's expression, but it's understanding what the words meant. And the idea being, the only thing that the people's representatives voted on were the words in the statute or mm-hmm. the rule at the time they were written. There's no way for me to tell what a word's going to mean 45 years from now, and so that's what I am voting on. No, I'm voting on that word at that moment, what okay. it meant.
So let's go back for a minute. Let's peel this back a little. When you say Scalia invented originalism, okay, did he sit down and write out, here's my philosophy, originalism, or he just made decisions, and when people asked him about him, he quoted it as, well, it's an original interpretation. How did that work?
Well, as he said was, you know, it became a radical idea when he brought it, because this was the way that judges used to interpret the law.
Mm-hmm.
So he kind of, from studying, developed his own philosophy, and what you'd see is a lot of his dissents. He actually did not write a lot of majority opinions. Almost nobody agreed with him. But his dissents were so fiery, and in some cases so mean and cutting, that law professors and even students would say, you've got to read this dissent too. Even if it was just the professor was mad and wanted to attack it in class and would say, read the opinion and read the Scalia dissent.
Mm-hmm.
And in reading his dissenting opinion, he would lay out the
so that's where he wrote it out. So let me ask you this follow-up then. If we're saying that Scalia is in the last 20 years that mm-hmm. he came along, and we're seeing this originalism, as you're saying, that it is looked at as a radical thing to look at the Constitution as an originalist, because prior to the last 20 years ago, there wasn't this living, breathing philosophy of the Constitution. It was all originalist. We always looked back. Is that correct?
That's the way that a lot of it was the majority way of thinking was look at the text as it was written and try and make an interpretation based on that.
Right. So when this new modern thinking of, well, the Constitution doesn't cover what happened in 2001, or it doesn't happen within 1998, we have to look at what they probably meant. Is that kind of the idea?
That's the other way of, you know, society's changed. Why are we letting a bunch of old dead dudes basically tell us how to run our society?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, looking at what society is like now, what the meaning of those words meant, will overlay society and kind of where we are in the world on top of that and come up with a new application for those things.
Now, I would say that the principles laid down in the Constitution, they are timeless because they're about freedom and justice and liberty. So I can see, at least in my naive opinion of this, is that a law comes out and the court has to look at it and say, does it protect freedom? Is it just to the people? And does it promote what the basic principles of what the founding fathers wanted? And then from there, we look and say, well, then that would be the right thing to do because that's who we are, right? Governed kind of by that Constitution. That's our founding documents.
Yeah, and I guess just from one of my professors who I like the most, always said, just think of it as, you know, none of that is the lawyer, is the judge's job. That was like, I'm just a lawyer. I'm just doing the law thing. What do the words say? Check one. Are you allowed to do that under the Constitution? If you are, have at it. You know, and if you don't like it, go ahead and elect some new people and write some new laws. And don't ask me to fix your problems. That's not my job. I'm an old lawyer in Washington, D.C. What do I know about society? Go ahead and elect some representatives and let them make the rules.
Well, that's awesome. So here on Chasing Justice, we're gonna learn all about the Constitution. Where you don't really get taught this in school, and not a lot of people talk about it, but we have a resource right here. So, you know, hearing the dog bark again, and I know some people have said to me they love the sound of the dogs in the background. Other people have said we hate the sound of the dogs. This is from Paw Paws Rescue, and I know we had Kathy on a few weeks ago talking about Paw Paws, and since then we have had another rescue come through our home, and he's a Springer Spaniel. I think they called him Springer because of what he was. Adorable dog, and he's just found a beautiful home a couple days ago. So when you hear that barking in the background, if you're thinking about getting a pet, call Paw Paws or one of the rescues around you. And that's why I like them to be on the show when they're running around here.
And let me just say, I think my prediction, I'll put it on Chasing Justice right now, is you'll have another animal in the house in about 2 months. So, Dad, there's four kids in the house. And when I moved out after college, they got a dog. And then when my brother moved out, oh, he's glaring at me already. When my brother moved out, they got a cat. And now my sister is about to go to college. I said they're going to get a lizard, or they're going to get a bird, or a parakeet, or something. But I know it's coming.
Let me put the kibosh on that right now. There's no more living things coming in here that I have to feed and take care of
when
in the neighborhood.
When you're chirping in 2 months, you'll say, oh, man, Joe Jr. was right.
Okay. Well, I'm glad we had that little bit of a vignette there about the Constitution. Now, what about Kavanaugh? What do we see Kavanaugh? He seems like a decent guy. Jack, you had something to say.
My question to you guys is this. With Kavanaugh coming in, most people seem to be mostly concerned with Roe versus Wade. As a footnote, a lot of people that I speak to about Roe versus Wade, it's not just two ways to get across the Potomac. It has to do with abortion and abortion rights for women. Everybody seems to be mostly concerned with his effect on Roe versus Wade and his ability to overturn it. Is his vote enough, in your opinion? And if it is, how soon do you think something like this is going to come?
That's a great question. I think it's probably going to come up pretty quick. What they say is, you know, now a lot of times you have people on both sides. If they have a law or a policy or change that they want tested, they will actually go out and more or less shop for the perfect, you know, the perfect client and the perfect plaintiff and the perfect case, and then bring it all the way through and give the court a chance. For it to get up to the Supreme Court, it'll probably take a year or two for something. Everything that I've heard is Kavanaugh is not so much a radical change guy. So more or less what you could expect from him is not a Roe versus Wade is overturned, but the restrictions you can put on abortion you can put more restrictions on abortion.
Do you see the court with him on there kicking this back to the states and saying the states will make the decision on whether or not abortion in each individual state is something that's permitted?
Well, what's interesting is that was kind of the Scalia position, as he said, you know, they have abortion in the UK, and guess what? Nobody cares. You know why? Because they voted on it, and that was the problem. You know, you solve the issue. Everyone thought about it. They voted. They passed the law. That's it. Because we get letters. We get protesters. We get people upset because it's essentially you have nine old lawyers sitting around telling you what you can do in society.
Are you essentially saying for each state to vote?
That would be essentially, that was kind of the position is, hey, you want it in California? Go ahead. And I think actually there are a handful of states, California being one of them.
New York just said they're going to protect it.
Protect the
right. Yeah. And he's like, you know, you're free to do that if you want.
Right, because that's a community standard. If that's what your community wants and your community votes for that, then, you know, that's the right of moving within the 50 states. If I don't like the way New Jersey does things or Connecticut or whatever, I can leave. I can go somewhere else.
Vote with your feet.
You vote with your feet.
And I think, yeah, I think much more likely than Kavanaugh, I don't think the judges would ever consider saying abortion is illegal. I think what they would do is say, this is something for the states to decide or for the people to decide.
Right.
If you want abortion, go ahead and pass a law on it, right. But don't ask us to.
Because it does get a little touchy when it comes to human issues.
Oh, certainly. And I think that they all appreciate that is, you know, the more they get involved in politics, the more they're going to have protests. And I don't think necessarily
right.
that's
And I think your point about the UK is right. The people there made a decision. They had a chance to vote on it. You're right. This was, and unfortunately, our friends on the left used the court as a way to overcome the will of the people because they'll find liberal judges to enact law that they couldn't get through the legislation. And that's how we get a lot of this. So I want to thank you two guys here in the neighborhood. We had a nice time here today, here on Chasing Justice in the neighborhood. We're going to head back for round three in a couple minutes. I'm going to ask you guys to hang around because we'd like to do a little disorder in the court we didn't get to now.
Sure.
But I know Joe's got some interesting stories because the law is an amazing thing here on Chasing Justice. We'll be right back.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health. Sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa. Award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Welcome back to Chasing Justice here on the America Out Loud Radio Network. So here we are, bing, 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 round three today, and we've kept our panelists from the neighborhood. We'll be a little more serious now. We're going to talk about some funny things here in the summertime, but more serious because this is not the neighborhood segment. This is now the talk around segment. So we have Jack, our rock and roll race car guy. Jack, how are you?
Joe, how you doing? Great
Thank you for coming here. Back. And we have Joe Pangaro, our attorney here. Joe, how are you?
Glad to be back, Dad.
That was an interesting segment that we just came through. I find that there's probably a need for that kind of conversation where people can actually, like Jack, ask a good question, and you have somebody who's knowledgeable like yourself, and you can actually answer these things, because we don't get that information. You don't get that on the news. They don't actually explain anything. They give you a point of view, and then they color everything in the story, whether it's the right side or the left side, to match what they want it to say. So I'm glad that you were here, and I think you can be a big help for our audience as we go forward. Okay, so one of the things that we do like to talk about is disorder in the court. Now, our court system is, I guess, from my point of view, when I look at the court system, that is, you can't get more serious than that. I mean, the court is where truth and justice is metered out by the defendants, the plaintiffs, the court people, everybody involved. If you're aggrieved and you go to court, you give your side of the story. The other side puts their case up, and then a judge or sometimes a jury will sit there and determine who was right and who was wrong, and then we all have to live with that decision. Now, of course, in our system, there is the appeals. You can appeal until you can't appeal no more, and that would be the Supreme Court. So we do have an end in sight. What's frustrating to me, and I think to a lot of people, is that it seems that with some of these issues, like these big national issues, why can't we just say, why would I have to fight about it 52 times down here? Because 4 years from now, we'll get it to the Supreme Court. Why don't we just say there's some mechanism where we can vote that Supreme Court take this today, listen to some arguments, and 6 months from now, come up with an answer, and that's it. You know, why are we jerking around with this for 5 years? It's national. but I think that goes back to our states' rights and all that, so I'm not going to go there. We're going to stick with disorder in the court. Our courts have made some wacky decisions. We've heard some crazy things come out of the courts, and it's all based on law. It's based on testimony and everything. But Joe, I think you have a couple of things you'd like to bring up for us.
I have been dying to talk about this one. It is probably the wackiest case I've ever seen. It's called the monkey selfie case. Now, I know we're talking beforehand that you said you've heard of the monkey selfie
case.
Yes,
I have.
Jack, have you heard of the monkey
selfie? No, I have not.
Okay, so this is perfect.
So first, let's make this clear for our audience. The monkey selfie case. So a selfie like a photograph on a cell phone.
Right. And I'll show Dad, you might have seen the picture before.
Yes, he's a very handsome fella.
So Jack, that is the monkey from the monkey selfie case.
I won't make any gym comments at this moment.
So what you do, if you want to follow along at home, just go ahead and type into Google monkey selfie. That's what it is. So this guy, he's a photographer by trade, and he spent time, I guess, in the jungle with these monkeys, teaching monkeys, believe it or not, how to take selfies.
That so he actually taught the monkeys how to use a camera?
Jack's dying over here. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I need a new job. Everybody out there, if you could help me, I need a job to teach animals how to take pictures of themselves.
Maybe you could teach chipmunks how to fix Chevrolets or something.
Please, I'm actually begging right now. Talk about the word Jim's
hat. So this guy who did this, he actually went there for the purpose of teaching these primates how to take selfie pictures. What was the purpose of that?
Now, the purpose is, it's a pretty cool picture.
I mean, a great picture.
That's the kind of thing.
I don't take a selfie that well.
And if you are a photographer trying to break through, like, that's a cool picture. That's going to get you.
Oh, I see. So the content of the picture was so good that the photographer thought maybe that would help further his career.
Right. That's the kind of thing, if you've looked it up now at home, but trust me, it's a really remarkable picture when you look at it, and there's a bunch of them. That's the kind of thing that gets you in National Geographic or something
like that. Sure, and you can see the intelligence in that animal's eyes. I mean, you really can. You know, it's amazing.
And so one quick primer on copyright law, just because this is what's important to this case. Copyright law is when you have a creative work, you have rights in that work as soon as you create it. You don't have to register it with the government. You don't have to do anything fancy, and it's anything. So, Jack, if I send you an email, I have copyright rights of the content of that email. If you, for this instance, take a picture, you have rights in that photograph.
So you could sell that photograph, you could make that photograph commercial,
or you can license the photograph, whatever you want to do. Mm-hmm. So this guy went to the jungle, taught monkeys how to take selfies, and this picture blew up. But then guess what? He gets sued on behalf of the monkey.
Now, wait a minute. So let's back up a second. So the guy goes to the jungle with his camera equipment. He gives it, teaches the monkeys.
He teaches, imagine how to take pictures.
Oh, I can't imagine. It'd be very difficult. You know, I can't even do that aperture and that, you know, holding the light.
I can't teach you to take a selfie.
It's difficult. So he teaches the monkey to take some selfies. And the monkeys take some extraordinary selfies.
And then the monkey sues him.
Now, this is where I want to get for our audience. The monkey obviously didn't go into court and file papers. Now, so the idea is that picture became commercialized.
Yes.
The photographer commercialized the photograph that the monkey took of himself.
And that's the idea is, hey, you have copyright rights in photos that you take. Mm-hmm. You didn't take that photo. The monkey took that photo. If anyone's going to get benefits from it, it should be the monkey.
Okay. Now, fair enough. Fair enough. But who went into court? The monkey go in and file some papers? What else did the guy teach the monkey? How did the monkey sue the guy?
He's teaching these monkeys quite a bit.
Yeah. How did the monkey ended up suing this guy?
So the monkey was represented by PETA, and this went all the way up through the Ninth Circuit.
So the People for Ethical Treatment of Animals were standing in
on the monkey's back.
On the monkey's behalf.
And
did the monkey know that?
Does the monkey have a car now? I really could use this job.
Hey, if you want to find this monkey, he's the only one with a Cadillac on Amazon.
It's crazy.
But the thing that drew me to it that I posted on LinkedIn was when you're writing a legal brief, lawyers and judges think very chronologically. So first you put the facts of the case. Then you put, and the facts is really where you want to tell your story, almost like a story, make it as sympathetic as possible. Then you put the law, the controlling law. And then the last part is you say, based on that law and these facts, here's how you should round things out. Mm-hmm. And the facts section for the photographer was one sentence. It said, "The only fact that matters is the plaintiff is a monkey."
And this was the photographer's point of view. Yeah. It's really great, but it's not like my neighbor. I stole my neighbor's work.
Right.
This is a monkey. This is not a human being. This is a monkey.
This is a monkey.
So I suppose if a caterpillar crawled across the controls of my phone and snapped this picture and it went viral, PETA could sue me on behalf of the caterpillar.
On behalf of the caterpillar. Yes.
And now, what happens to them? Where does the money go? That he gets. What's the monkey do with the money?
I have no idea. Now, I know that they settled the case, and so you can't always find out as much from settlements. But from what I heard, this photographer, actually, the sad end of the story, went bankrupt. This guy basically lost his shirt.
Because he had to defend this. Now, did the monkey have to come to court when there was a settlement?
And I'm thinking to myself, his wife was saying to him years ago, "What are you doing? You got this cockamamie idea to teach a monkey to take a photograph?"
And then he went bankrupt. I just can't believe it.
And she's saying, "Another scheme. Why don't you just get a regular job?"
I told you so.
So there's an opening. Is that what you're saying, Joe?
So now, is there controlling case law now that non-human beings that can take, now whatever it is, a dog could be taught to take a photograph. And anything that animal now has copyright. Does that change the law that an animal, not a human being, has copyright rights?
Well, I think we have to wait and see. I think what's interesting is there are not going to be many situations like this. So a lot of times,
I would guess not.
I heard PETA is very busy right now. They're representing the monkey because he was thrown out of Saks Fifth Avenue when he was trying to buy a tuxedo for the court hearing.
Now, For the moment, I'm going to put on Jimmy's hat. What if can aliens? Do they get rights in the courts? I don't understand. So this has to now go through the court system, and we're going to spend millions of dollars to determine whether or not a monkey has rights in our courts and now can own that.
Through the court system already, it's gone.
Is there a guardian set up for this monkey? I mean, the money has to go. Who gets the money? The monkey's not getting the money. He's not walking around with $50 bills. He's back in the jungle, eating kumquats or something. What's he doing? Where's that money going now?
I imagine, if I had to guess, I would imagine it would be some sort of like rainforest preservation, right, or something like that.
Right. Obviously, they're not writing. What would the monkey call himself?
Two monkey.
Right. Two monkey.
On a serious legal note, now, since we have a representative of the legal system here, if you were to take a picture of me. Let's just say not taking a selfie, but maybe throwing a basketball or something along those lines. Now, you send that picture to me on the internet. That's a picture of me throwing a basketball. I use that picture. The picture goes viral, and I begin to make money off that picture. Now, that's a picture of me. Are you now going to sue me to get some of that money? Or because it's a picture of me, am I the only one who's going to get that
money?
Let
me guess at this before you go.
Go ahead.
I'm going to say this. It's your likeness. Okay. Now, of course, they would come up whether or not you permitted the use of your likeness. So that would be one thing. The other thing would be I took the photograph. So therefore, I own the content because it's content that we're talking about, intellectual property.
Understood, but you're using my likeness.
Now, right. So, okay, let's go to the lawyer. What do you think, lawyer?
Well, that's
After the fact, though, Joe, after the fact that you have found out that you sent me a photograph of me throwing, let's say, a basketball. It went viral on the internet. Now I'm selling advertisement to everybody who wants to look at my photograph. Now you're mad. You want to get on board. Do you have the right to sue me under those copyright laws that you stated earlier to get on board to get some, or do you get on board to get all of the money?
To be quite honest, it because I took the photograph, yeah, I have rights in the photograph.
I think we're going to have to talk to Kavanaugh on this one.
Now, let me ask you a question. Let's go back to the monkey, Mr. Monkey, who won all this money in this thing, or might win this thing. How about the photographer that let him use his camera? Is there, there was no
a
contract.
Property rights thing there?
Is there a property rights that I let you use my camera,
no
monkey, and
that
you took this picture?
The monkey had to sign.
Right, or is that the, buyer beware? You should have had some kind of contract.
That's, the whole issue was it's a creative work. So you taught the monkey how to make a creative work, but the monkey made the creative work.
Not you. Well, actually, on principle or on logic, it makes perfect sense. When you look at the law, The law is the creator of the content has the right to it. Doesn't matter who owned the camera. They should have had a contract to use the camera, but the monkey actually pushed the button and snapped his own picture. And like we said, it's a very good picture.
And so that's really what it comes down to is if it wasn't the monkey selfie, if it was the Joe selfie and it was a picture of me, it'd be an open and shut case that I get rights in that photo because I took the photograph.
Right.
But the weird part is that it was a monkey.
Okay, see, so here on Chasing Justice, you might say to yourself, how does this fit into the theme? Well, this is justice. This monkey is looking for justice, and so is the photographer. And all of us create intellectual property, whether we realize it or not. And I know, you know, I do creative writing as well. And I always concerned because you do creative writing or you write songs and you feel like you have to send them to Congress and have them, you know, patented that these are yours. And you really don't. The minute you create it, it's yours. The problem might be you can't prove that later on when somebody robs you when you created it or how you created it.
Right, that's right. So a lot of times what you want to do is it's best practice, you know, to you want to maybe register something, but you don't need to have the rights in it.
Right.
But registering it gives you a date that you created.
Right, so then you have something to go back on when they say, hey, I created this song 3 weeks ago, and you say, no, 4 years ago I sent it to the Library of Congress and I registered it.
Sure. Yeah.
So now that tightens your law up. Okay.
Well, there used to be a thing, maybe it's antiquated now, but there used to be a thing for amateur inventors. They would write out their entire invention, whatever it is, a picture of it or what have you, and then put it in an envelope and mail it to themselves so that the United States Postal Service would stamp that envelope and you would have a guarantee that you came up with it first.
That's actually it's a great point. Yeah, the law changed a little bit in 2010, but yes, that is a process that a lot of people did, and some people even still do, is they'll mail it to themselves. You know, day of, they'll write
it. I think I've done that.
Yeah.
I think I've done that
myself. And you just keep it sealed in the envelope, and you keep it there for yourself, and this is proof of at least the date that you came up with this idea.
Right.
That is
very
a little antiquated, but that is something people
say. Well, I think this is interesting because justice knows no bounds. When it comes to the law, it's amazing how, and this is where justice and the law really wind its way through all of our lives all day long. We don't realize how many times this comes up, and that's why this is important, and that's why it's important who's on the court and how things are looked at. So we got a minute or so, Joe. You have another one?
I got one more, and this one is quick. But
disorder in the court. Disorder in the court. Disorder in the court.
So a lot of times, courts are, you know, everything is based in litigation off dates. So you file the complaint, the other side has 60 days to respond. You then have 60 days to respond to their response. You send an interrogatory, they have 30 days to get back. You ask for documents, they have whatever. So it's all very structured. But if you're not going to make the deadline, you're allowed to ask for an extension. A lot of times courts will be flexible, and a lot of times you just have to explain what the situation is.
Mm-hmm.
So
there's some reasonableness built into the system.
Reasonableness built in. But this yokel, he asked for an extension, and he said it was because he was tending to a sick family member.
Mm. Oh, well, how could that's sympathetic, right?
Right.
We all have a sick family member at some point.
And I'll just call him Mr. X.
Mm-hmm.
They said specifically, Mr. X turns out posted on his public Instagram account that he was not in Mexico City tending to a sick family member. He was actually on vacation in Miami. And he posted photographs to his Instagram when he knew that the only reason he got the extension was because he told the court he was dealing with a sick family member.
Right.
And he was on vacation and he posted photographs of
himself.
So
he was undone by his own social media.
Yes.
Which now there's a bigger point here. Social media is part of our lives now. As long as there's electricity, we're all good. As soon as that electricity goes out, it's 1805, you better be able to churn butter. But until then, social media is part of our lives. We all have business accounts, we have social media, we have emails, all this stuff. And one of the things I teach people as part of what I do is that your social media is a timestamp of something you said and did forever. So if you say or do something on social media, you're having fun one night and you post all these ridiculous pictures, people have lost their jobs over that. They've lost credibility over those kind of things. There's not always a lot of going back and explaining yourself later on. People see something or hear something that you said, and if they want to take it out of context, they can take it out of context. I know a lot of employers now, when people are applying for jobs, immediately they'll say, what is your password for your Facebook or for one of these other social media sites, and they want to ream on through your stuff and take a look.
A lot of times it's just as simple as before I went back to law school, I was working at a business, and someone would go in for an interview, and then afterwards the boss would go to the youngest person in the office, assuming they had the most social media accounts, and said, look up all the photos and find all the stuff you can on this person, on like Facebook, on Twitter, whatever it is, and you know, the next interview, the person comes in, and they've got a portfolio of stupid photos and stupid things they said and did.
Right, that doesn't look so appealing for someone you want to hire for a job. Well, listen, gents, I want to thank you very much for staying here on Segment 3 on Chasing Justice. We're just about done. So everybody have a great week out there. Remember our sponsors, jpengaro.com, theblumagazine.com, aplustechnology.com, and MCON IT. We didn't throw them in the beginning, but they're excellent too. So remember, I'm MCON IT. We love them guys and girls there. So until next week, remember, be a part of the solution, not a part of the problem, here on Chasing Justice on the America Out Loud Radio Network.